All right, welcome everyone to our Zojo Talk podcast. Today, my special guest is Kem Tekinai, and I, yes, have pronounced that correctly because I confirmed it with him before. Kem is a longtime member of the Zojo development community. I believe he was actually recognized at the last conference as having used Zojo since its original incarnation. So that's, you know, like really, really long time.
Which was a surprise to me, by the way.
He didn't know that he'd been using it that long. He was tripped. But I'm going to let Kem give a little bit of an overview about how he came to start using Zojo and what he uses it for.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me. Well, my primary business has been consulting, Macintosh consulting. I've been doing that since 1992. And I remember I was at a client one day, and he had asked me a question. And then I thought, well, I could, I don't think there's anything on the market to meet his need. But perhaps I can develop something. And I stopped. And I thought, I don't have anything to develop in anymore. I used to have tools. I used to use a tool called ProGraph back in the System 7 days and the System 9 days. That had been discontinued, and the direction my business had moved, I was using FileMaker and I was using 4D for database development, but I didn't have anything that I could write a standalone program in, and I thought, well, that's a problem. So I went to the market to look around for what was available, and this must have been around 1998, right? Because that's when...
The first version was released in 1998, yeah.
Yeah. So I looked around and I found Future Basic. I don't know if you remember that version.
I remember hearing of it. I've never seen it in action.
Future Basic was nice. It was a basic dialect. It was a what you might call a traditional type of environment where you created text files of code and you had to use includes to get all the pieces working together, and they gave you a framework to give you a template of how to do it. And there was a separate application to edit the GUI. And it was fast. It was very fast. So I used that for a while, but I wasn't completely satisfied with the experience, as you might imagine. So I kept looking, and I came upon Real Basic. And I saw the editor for it, and I said, you know, this is kind of nice. Everything is all included. You can throw a button on a screen. You can put the code right in the button. It reminded me a bit of how HyperCard works without HyperCard's limitations, because it was a true programming language. And I slowly started switching to... I found myself using Real Basic more and more, even though in side-by-side speed comparisons, it wasn't as fast as Future Basic. The difference was actually minimal for most functions, and the experience was so much better. So I adopted Real Basic. Now I was told at XDC that was version 1.0. I thought I came in at version 2.0 or 3.0, but I guess the records don't lie. It was 1.0.
The records can't possibly lie. I came in at 3.5, I think, and that would have been like 2001,
something like that. Yeah, I know that it was it was a long time between version 1 and 2, and then 2 and 3, and then the version started coming quicker. I don't know when Jeff took over, but I think it had some correlation to when Jeff took over, but I don't know who remembers that far back.
Yeah, it's ancient history, you know.
Exactly. So I had started adopting Real Basic, and I started using it more and more, at first to do simple tools for myself and tools for my clients. And it's been like that ever since.
Wow. So you've been consulting since the early 90s.
Yes. But I actually, last February, I informed my clients that I'm no longer doing day-to-day consulting. It got to be a little too much. There are development projects that I want to work on that I just wasn't finding time to work on. The thing about consulting is you don't, because you're maintaining networks for people, you're maintaining their systems, emergencies are coming up all the time, questions are coming up all the time. You can't plan a day. You can get up in the morning and say, okay, I've got nothing on my schedule. I can work on this project, that project. And by the end of the day, you haven't worked on anything except taking phone calls and answering emails from clients. And I decided that I was going to make a change and move away from that aspect of my business and move towards full-time development.
And when you say that you were doing consulting, it was primarily, it sounds like, IT type consulting.
Yes, IT consulting. And I'd say it's about 70% IT type consulting and about 30% development.
Okay.
For clients. That was mostly it used to be in 4D and FileMaker, and then changed mostly to FileMaker, and then also, you know, standalone applications as needed.
All right, neat. Yeah, I haven't done a lot of IT type work. You know, you always get roped into it as a developer at, you know, various companies because, you know, you're the person that knows how to use a computer. But
right, you're the go-to guy that they ask.
Yeah, but I've never had that as my official job. It always did seem like it would be a little rough because, like you said, you never know what you're going to be doing. It always depends on, you know, what people's emergencies are.
Now, I can tell you that there were aspects of that were very satisfying. You know, I don't know if I ever told you, I'm a lawyer by training. I practiced law for about 2 years, and the consulting was supposed to be how I made ends meet until my law practice took off. Consulting took off instead, and I said, you know, I like this so much better. I'm gonna go with this. But it gave me an interesting comparison. I discovered I'm the same person. Whether I go see you as a lawyer or I go see you as a consultant, I'm the same guy. I'm going to listen to what you have to say. I'm going to tell you what I think. I'm going to do research where I need to do research. And I'm going to give you the best answers I know how to give and the most honest answers I can give. What I discovered as a lawyer is, one, nobody's ever happy to see a lawyer. Nobody comes in smiling. Nobody leaves smiling. The other thing I learned is nobody ever trusts a lawyer. As I said, I'm the same guy, but I had clients who did not trust what I told them until the day I handed them the check, and it was exactly the amount I said it was going to be because they had to look.
Right.
As a consultant, you walk in, people are in trouble. You perform your magic. They're happy to see you. They're glad you came. You leave them with a smile. It's a very satisfying vocation.
Yeah, I had a slightly similar thing. Years ago, the company I was working for, I ended up leaving to go do consulting. So I was working with .NET stuff, and I was switching. I was going to do, you know, at the time, real basic consulting, I guess it was full-time. Mm-hmm. But I still did consulting with this company for another 6 months or so. And I distinctly remember just all the stuff I presented while I worked there that didn't stick when I was a quote consultant and went in and presented it. They were all best ideas ever and were immediately implemented. And I was exactly the same guy. I didn't even work there. Yes. And it was just a very strange thing. It was very apparent, and I didn't understand it. But
I had an effect of some clients, not often, but some clients a lot of my clients were long-term clients. I had clients and I still do actually to some extent because they still call me, back in the, you know, from back in the early 90s. But some of the clients that I had for a while, I noticed an effect where I would tell them something and they would question it. You know, they didn't used to question it when I first came to see them. I would tell them to do X, or I recommend Y, and they would do X or do Y, or they wouldn't, but, you know, they would strongly consider it. And then they got to a point where I'd tell them something, oh, that's not really an issue. And I started saying, listen, you're paying me a lot of money for this advice, but if you want to disregard it, it's up to you. And after I said that, usually then they would take a second look at what I was saying. And naturally, I was always right.
Well, naturally.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. All of us developers are always, always right. It's a weird dynamic.
And never introduce bugs. And if there's a problem in the code, it's somebody else's problem.
You have that in a little poster in your office, right?
Yes. It must be a Zojo bug.
Burn. Well, speaking of projects you've been working on, something you recently posted to the the Zojo Forum is a project called Kaju, which
Kaju, that's right.
I, before we dive into that, I think we should bring up for the listeners, we want to know why, you know, everything about you is so hard to pronounce.
Well, you know, if it were easy, I wouldn't be able to hold your attention. You're talking, of course, of my last name, and in some instances, my first name, which seemed to confuse some people. My last name is pronounced Tekinay. It's a Turkish name, and A-Y is pronounced I in Turkish. And I've Americanized a little bit by stressing the I a little bit, so it's Tekinay. And it's like take an I is how I tell people to do it. What actually throws a lot of people is Kem, because they don't want to hear Kem. They don't want to write Kem. They think it's a typo. They think they misheard. They
right.
think Ken, usually. They think it's sometimes Kim. I had an interesting effect when I'd go see people in doorman buildings. I tell the doorman, you know, they'd say, well, may I ask your name? I'd say, it's Kem. And I'd always stress the M, Kem. Ken? No, Kem. Cameron? No, Kem. Kim? No, listen to what I'm saying. It's Kem. Anyway, but at least it gets conversation started.
Yes, I certainly believe it would. That's funny. You could have a whole podcast of just strange pronunciation problems you've had to deal with.
Yes.
So your new project that you created is called Kaju.
That's
and
right.
It is an open source, free right. project for a self-updater for Zojo apps. Why don't you
yes.
tell us a little bit about it?
Okay, well, it's something I've been thinking about for a while, but never had time to do. I looked around the market, and of course, self-updating is something that's very convenient in our day-to-day lives when we have applications that offer self-updates and do them, and it's painless. It's just a beautiful thing to behold. And I looked around, and I saw that for the Mac market, there was Sparkle. And I know that Christian of Monkey Bread incorporated Sparkle into a plugin and also some Windows utility. I think he packages in there so that he has a similar type of feature for both Mac and Windows applications. Although I've never looked at Sparkle directly, and I've never looked at the other solution that he provides. But I didn't see anything for Linux, and I didn't see anything that worked the same way on all three platforms. But as I said, I didn't have time to do this. Well, I've been doing work with Jeremy Kauger at his company, Advanced Pricing. And in the project we're working on, the question of self-updating came up. And we threw back and forth should we go with the plugin like one Christian offers, or should we develop our own? And because we like in-house solutions,
right?
We decided, let's develop our own. How long could it take? So the idea was, rather than using some kind of external utility that you have to incorporate into your project that will handle the updating, which I think is how Sparkle handles it, although I'm not sure. I did some experimentation with Zojo and discovered that you can make a shell script survive a quit on all three platforms. Of course, Mac and Linux are both Unix based, so the Unix command nohup takes care of it. And on Windows, apparently all shell programs survive the quit, so I didn't have to do anything special for that. The only thing about Windows is it opens the terminal window when it's running, but based on my own experience and other people I've talked to, that's a normal experience for Windows users, so that wasn't a problem. So we decided to go ahead using shell scripts to handle the updating. That's how it came about, and because I'm doing this work for Advanced Pricing, and they needed it done, they basically underwrote the time that it took to do this. So a lot of the thanks goes to them for allowing me to do this. But I can tell you that it took far longer than I would have ever imagined. Just doing the Windows script took longer, I think, than every other part of the project. Now, it certainly took longer than the other two scripts combined because, you know, once you have the Mac script, the Linux script is not too different from the Mac script.
Right.
But then the Windows script, you have to use the batch, you know, the batch scripting language, which is, I don't think it's been updated since, you know, 1908. And it is very, very picky. And well, anyway, I'm sure anyone who's used Windows and batch files knows the issues or the kinds of issues I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, there is a more advanced scripting system, I think PowerShell or something like that, but I don't know that that's installed on Windows automatically or if that's just a developer tool or something like that.
Well, one of the criteria we had is that it had to be able to use tools that were native to the system. So thanks to help on the forum, I was able to do the unzip natively on Windows, doing it on Mac and Linux, of course. On Mac, you use a Ditto on the command line, and on Linux, you use unzip, which are both native tools. On Windows, we're using using Olay, so that goes through the OS. So it had to be native tools. The point was that the end user did not have to install anything more on their system, and the developer didn't have to put anything more into their project than just right. these classes. And I'm happy to say that it meets all those criteria. The only thing it doesn't do, which I'd like to introduce at some point, is it doesn't elevate permissions. So the end user has to have write permission to the directories that are being affected.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's how it came about.
Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, certainly when you posted that on the forum, it had a large amount of discussion for an add-on, so certainly a meta need, sounds like.
I hope people use it. I've been introducing it in my own projects. The one that I'm working on with Jeremy, and then another client whose project I'm maintaining. I've put it in. It's been so I'm not only the developer of this, I'm actually a user, and it's so far it's met all the needs that I set out for. That I set out to accomplish, and I'm actually quite proud of it. I'm very happy with it, the way it turned out.
Well, it certainly is a nice looking tool and should be useful to a lot of people. In general, I've been very impressed lately with the amount of open source projects that have been appearing for Zojo lately. I mean, I add them when I see them or when someone brings them to my attention to the list. On our doc pages of these things, and the open source project list is getting pretty long enough I may have to start thinking about categorizing it or something.
Well, everyone listening to this should be aware, because they may not be, that if they have an open source project or actually any tool that they introduce for Zojo, they should let you know, because you add it to the special page in the documentation that lists these things, and that's a great resource for people who are looking for add-ons and other tools to use in their development.
Yeah, definitely. And it doesn't even have to be one that you necessarily created yourself. If you just come across one that you notice, you know, we're not referencing in the docs or somewhere to make it easy for people to find, yeah, by all means, let me know so I can get that added. But yeah, it's been a lot of busy people creating a lot of useful stuff that's been popping up. And particularly a lot of the later stuff I've been seeing is a lot of iOS type things, which
makes sense.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing. I mean, it helps grow the community. It fills holes. I think it's a wonderful thing, and I think it's nice that people are out there contributing their time to make the whole platform more robust.
And I like that it helps expose people to source control to some extent, because most of these projects are hosted on GitHub, which is a free repository. So it gives people a little tiny bit of exposure to Git. If they're so inclined, they can dig into it a little more.
Yes, I agree with that.
All right. Well, and speaking of forum-related things, if anyone has perused the forum at any time since its inception, when Zojo was released a little while ago, a year or so ago, anytime there's a post there that has the term regex or regular expression, within about, based on my timings and stat studies and averages, it's about 26 seconds we'll be able to is somehow posting a reply that exactly answers the question that was asked. And first I'm wondering how he knows this, because it's almost like he senses it, a disturbance in the force, but And secondly, I continue, even though I've, you know, had much assistance from Kim personally helping me with questions, I continue to look at regex and see hieroglyphics.
Well, Paul, I have to say, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, wait, it's the other Cam technique.
Right. That's all those other Cams. I think the prerequisite here is to not have a life per se, and to be on the forums a lot. So it's not that I'm seeing the regular expression posts more often than others. It's just that I try to keep up with the forum. So I check the forum, unless I get very busy in a day, I check the forum fairly frequently. And because I do that, the posts with regular expressions or those type of questions tend to pop out at me. Now, I wish there was a feature in the forum where you could set your own filters that, you know, sort of like Google's feature. What's Google's feature where you can tell them that there's a certain search that you want them to continuously perform and inform you of?
Yeah, I have some of those set up. I forget what they're called, though.
I think everyone listening knows what we're talking about. So I wish there was something in the forum along those lines that I could put in certain terms like regular expression or regex or, you know, other things, and it would actually flag those for me. Until then, I'm aware of the new posts, and so I tend to spot the ones that that interest me. As for your implied question of how I got so good at regular expressions, I think anyone who can get really fluent in regular expressions if they just write a regular expression editor, like RegexRx.
Like you did, right.
Like I did. although as a competitor, I advise you against doing that.
It's too much work.
That's not a good idea. there's a great website, regular-expression.info or regular-expressions.info. I think it's regular-expression.info. And it's a tutorial on regular expressions. And a lot of what I learned from there, along with some other sources, and just trial and error. When I was actually writing the app, I would go into Zojo and I'd create test projects and use the regex object to test my patterns to make sure that the matches it was coming up with was matching what regexRx was telling me. And if it didn't, then I would go back to regexRx and find out what was wrong. Through that method, I actually discovered that there was in the past, I don't think they exist anymore, but there were bugs in the way Zojo was handling replaces, and that's been since fixed. But just through trial and error, obviously the point of an app like RegexRx is that you can do your trial and error in one place without having to write code, and then copy that code into your project without too much trouble.
Right. Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, I certainly, when I see the stuff you put together, like, man, that just, if you could whip those out, the lines of code you can eliminate is tremendous.
It's an interesting thing about regular expressions is when you get to look at them, they are a programming language. So you can have subroutines, you can have straight inline code. And if you get to, if you put in a certain a mode, you can put spaces in, so you can space out the patterns to make them easier to read. But at the end of the day, it's a language like any other language, and you can learn it like a language.
Well, there you go. And I think I may have heard, or maybe I dozed off, Ken was offering free training to anyone that needs to.
I think you dozed off there.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that happened. All right. Well, the last thing I have here on my list that you might want to talk about is that if you've ever been to XDC, you may have seen Kim and I in a corner arguing about stuff. And what we're usually arguing about...
Discussing, Paul. Discussing.
Discussing, right? Is that what we're usually discussing is Red Sox versus Yankees and baseball stuff. And as Kim notes, a fair amount of the docs tend to use baseball teams and stuff as example information.
That is incorrect. They tend to use Red Sox as example information.
No, that can't be true. I have other teams in there.
I did a search in the docs for a single mention of Jeter. Not even Derek Jeter, just Jeter. Not a single mention. It's amazing to me.
Well, he doesn't play baseball anymore, so he's...
Yes, and of course, the Docs just came into existence yesterday, so...
And that's a hard one to spell, so I try to stay away from it.
And a hard one to pronounce, too.
So, as you might guess, Kem and I are big baseball guys, and maybe when the baseball season starts back up again and we see the Red Sox jump into an early lead, we'll have a podcast... that would be us arguing about baseball with maybe a little bit of technical talk.
I don't know if you want to wait that long, Paul.
Well, I was telling Kim before is that every year I do a fantasy baseball league that I've been running. I've been running it on Yahoo's Fantasy Baseball for a really long time. I'm going to guess like at least 10 years, maybe 15.
And if I may throw in here, every year he tries to talk me into joining fantasy baseball also.
Yeah, well, every year I tend to need someone. And I bring in new people, and then they last a year or maybe two, and then they, like, drop out. And then I need to find new people. And so, yeah, I get anyone that knows anything about baseball, I try to hit up to see if they're interested. And so I've been doing that one for many years. But the last couple of years, I have a neighbor that does a serious fantasy baseball league. They've been doing it for something like since the 80s. Where you had to do it by hand with paper, and you'd get mailed to you the stats each week that you would then go through to calculate, you know, the positions of each person's teams and stuff. It's insane. I can't even imagine. But this group of 12 people have been doing it for that long. And apparently, and I've been helping them each year when they did the drafts and stuff. We'd go to actually our local baseball stadium here where one of the Red Sox minor league teams plays. And we'd have a draft meeting in one of the conference rooms there. And I think one of the people that works for the Sea Dogs, as it is on this league. And I would help out with the draft and stuff. Well, it turns out, and I was like, how do I get on this league? But it was like, you know, a Supreme Court justice, death or retirement. Well, luckily there was a spot open and it wasn't a death. Someone retired from the league and said, you know, they'd had enough doing it this long. And they offered the spot to me. So I'm now in this league with a bunch of people that have been playing together for a really long time and me who barely understands all the crazy rules they have. So I'm like sweating bricks to get going so I don't completely embarrass myself and come in last place this year.
Well, I can tell you based on the moves that both teams have made that the Red Sox haven't made any dramatic moves, I think. And the Yankees have been bringing in pieces. No superstars, just pieces. So they'll improve. I think defensively they'll improve. I mean, just the fact, I mean, hardcore Yankee fans will hate that I'm saying this, but just the fact that Derek Jeter has retired will improve them at shortstop. And this is not a diss on Jeter as a player, just that he didn't retire as the player he had been in years
past.
He
was not a young man for a shortstop.
Yes, yes. And his range had suffered, and his defense had suffered, and his offense had suffered. But he's a legend and a hero to many, so I had no problem with him being there. Having said that, a new player at that position will be an improvement.
Except that new player apparently is Stephen Drew.
Potential. No, Stephen Drew will be playing second base, apparently.
Oh, that's right. They're going to shift the position. Okay.
Yeah, so they're platooning Gregorius and... I don't remember the other player, but I don't think they've settled on a shortstop yet. Gregorius, of course, his offense is questionable. So we'll see how that turns out. Then, of course, who knows where A-Rod's going to play. They have a third baseman, so A-Rod's probably going to be the DH. Whether he can hit anymore or not is anyone's guess.
Yeah, he hasn't played in like a year and a half at this point.
Because of the suspension. And so I think defensively they'll improve. I think their pitching will be adequate. I remains to see the problem last year was really that they couldn't hit. I don't see anything this year to suggest that they will. but we'll have to see. The Red Sox had multiple problems last year, as you might recall.
Yeah.
I tend to forget. Where did they finish last year?
Well, I seem to recall it throughout the year they were the reigning world champions, but...
That meant a lot when they finished at least behind everybody, I think.
Maybe.
I mean in the league. No, maybe not that bad. But I'm not sure. It's going to be interesting to see whether they can overcome the problems they had last year, mostly because I don't know why they had their problems last year.
Yeah, it seemed like it was a karma thing. Just in 2013, everything went right for them to get to and then win the World Series. And then everything. 2014, everything went wrong. And it was just, you know, instead of having two relatively average years, they had one brilliant year and then one absolutely horrific year.
Well, let's not forget 2012, where they also had a horrific.
Yeah. Well, and that goes with my prediction. You know, if they last place 2012, first place world champions 2013, and then last place 2014, we're now back in the, you know, the next year. So it's obvious this is the year of the world champion Boston Red Sox.
You know, it's funny. That's not as obvious to me.
Can't argue with patterns.
I say, well, let's not forget 2011, where specifically September of 2011. Anyway, the point is that the Red Sox, as a question, is whether they are a bad team that had a fantastic year in 2013, or whether they're a great year that just had a disastrous year in 2000.
Yeah, well, and I think you can say that about all the teams, at least in the Red Sox Yankees division. Is they all seem to be, none are super great and none seem to be really super awful, at least on paper.
Well, the 2013 Red Sox were really super great. As you said, a lot of things really went right for them. I mean, it looked like every ball that was hit just found a hole, and a lot of things really did go right for them. I can't say, as a Yankees fan, I can't say that we've had a great Yankees team for a while. So it remains to be seen what this year brings.
Yep. Well, it should be exciting. I'm not a football guy, but apparently there's some big football game coming up in a week or so.
I've heard something about that. Yeah. But football is where you have a ball that you underinflate and you try to throw into a basket. I think
I'm in New England. I live in New England, and apparently these Patriot football team are going to the Super Bowl, but there's this big drama covering our newspapers about the footballs being deflated by something. I don't.
Yeah, we've heard one or two things about that in New York.
Yeah,
too.
So it's just been pretty funny because I just laugh because every year I'm like, I eagerly await the Patriots to lose in the playoffs so that finally people here will stop talking about football. And now they made the Super Bowl. So now, and then you get this scandal on top of that, and it's just like never ending. But
for any Jets fans who might be listening, the Super Bowl is the game, the big game at the end of the season where the teams that won the most compete to win the championship. They may not be familiar.
Slam.
I actually heard that joke on a show the other day. I thought it was very funny.
Yeah, that is a bit funny. Yeah, so as a, you know, Super Bowl, I don't think I've ever really watched a Super Bowl to say I've watched it. You know, it'll be on the TV, and then I do the usual look up during the commercials to see the commercials, and then go back to reading or whatever I was doing when the actual game is on.
Yeah, I'll on that day of the Super Bowl, I will usually check the score every now and then just so that I at least know who won.
Yeah, you kind of, you know, you got to know that. And you don't want to say, you know, like, who won the Super Bowl, and you come back and say something like, did the Knicks win?
I think Tiger Woods won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you just look crazy. So, yeah.
My theory of football, though, is it's a bunch of guys line up, crash into each other, fall down, get up, and do it again. That's what football looks like to me.
Well, yeah, I don't understand it at all. I was at my sister's last week. We had a big party for the whole family, and the Patriots are on. I guess it was a couple weeks ago. But anyway, the Patriots are on, and everyone was watching it, and I don't understand it. I think she had me, like, fixing her Wi-Fi or something. And and there was some play about something where they were calling the penalty about something, and apparently it was because the player had touched the other player wrongly. And I'm like, isn't this football? Isn't that like the purpose? Oh, well, you can't touch them in certain situations and not if they're doing this or that. And I'm like, all right, enough. I don't want to know anymore. But I'm sure it's a fun game, and it seems like it works well for television. So that's probably why it's so popular.
This has been Sports Talk with Paul Lefevre. We'll be right back.
Exactly. This is the extent of it. I know nothing else about any sports. And as you can obviously tell, I know absolutely nothing about football, as we call it here in the United States. Apparently all our European listeners will then be contacting us and saying that's not football.
Yes, we're talking about the crappy American sport, not the crappy European sport.
I did not say that for the record. But yeah, I know nothing about any other sport. So I can only predict that at some point in the heat of summer, Kim and I will get back together and discuss baseball, but that's about it.
By the way, in some regions of the world, what I just said could probably get me at least beaten up, if not worse.
Yeah. People will now find you. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Insult the Prophet Muhammad, that's one thing. But insult soccer, now you're in rarefied territory.
There you go. Well, on that note, I think that's probably about enough for another episode of Zojo Talk. Since I'm going to be trying to do these a little more frequently, they probably don't need to be quite as lengthy. Not everyone has infinite time like Cam over here. So,
nothing but time.
So I want to thank you, Kim, for being a part of Zojo Talk, and thank everyone for listening. Have a great day.
Thanks, Paul.